Well, I'm delighted now to welcome on Talk Radio Europe, Tom Griffiths, and make sure I say your name correctly. Good afternoon, Tom. How are you?
Hi there. I'm well, thank you.
Tom, this really came off the back of us watching a TED Talk. We like our TED Talks here on this show, and we watched your TED Talk, which we're really impressed by. And before we get on to really the kind of crux of what we're talking about here, just explain to us what you do for a living. It's got a great title, I think.
Yeah. So, I mean, the TED Talk is about lessons from computer science that you can use to improve human decision making. Mm. And what I work on is exactly that. So I'm a professor at Princeton University, and I work at the intersection of psychology and computer science. So I'm a computational cognitive scientist, yeah. And that means trying to understand how human mind works using ideas that we take from computer science and other disciplines that are related to that.
Yeah. And what we found fascinating was, I think this, well, I'll say it's a magic number, 37%. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, so this is one example of a situation where it's a kind of problem that people face every day that we don't recognize as a computational problem and that we don't know actually has a solution. So if you're, say, trying to find an apartment to live in, and so you're going from place to place, you're going to open houses, you're checking out the apartments, at some point you have to decide you've seen enough places and you're ready to start making offers. And that's a tricky problem. Everyone grapples with it. But it turns out it's a problem which has been studied by mathematicians and computer scientists, and it has a solution. So if you have, say, 100 places that are on the market, and you're going to try and find the very best place, then the strategy that you should take is to go and look at, you know, the first 37 of those, 37%,
yeah.
And then after that, you're ready to act. You jump on the next place you see after that, which is better than anything you've seen so far. And that maximizes the probability you find the very best place.
And I mean, this can go down to any level, really. You're talking about big decisions like maybe where you're going to live, who you're going to marry, maybe some of these big life-changing decisions. But this can be as far as, and I use this in a TED Talk, where you're going to eat that evening, for instance.
Yeah, so that's an instance of another kind of problem. So the 37% rule applies in any situation where you're looking at a sequence of possibilities. Like you said, it could be, you know, marriage partners, it could be apartments, and you have to make a decision about.
Out of 100 women, you've got to date 37 first, or?
Well, it's the principle is that if you're thinking about the problem just in terms of you're going to see a sequence of candidates and you're making a decision about which one to pursue, then that is the answer. You'd actually look at 37% of your sort of accessible dating pool, and that might be 100 people, it might be less than that. or it could also be 37% of the amount of time that you have.
Yeah.
So, you know, we do this calculation where, say, if you're looking between the ages of 18 and 40, then 37% of that time is around 26, and that's the point where dating should stop being fun and start turning into something more serious.
Yeah.
There are other kinds of computational problems that people face all the time that we don't necessarily think about as, you know, as computational problems. And another one of those is, as you said, trying to decide what restaurant to go to. And that's a problem where, you know, unlike perhaps dating or apartments, you have an opportunity to go back to the same place multiple times,
yeah.
Right? So you don't have to like choose one restaurant that you're going to go to for the rest of your life. And in that problem, you run into what's called the explore-exploit trade-off. Every night when you're going to go to a restaurant, you have to make a decision. Am I going to go to a place I've been to before that I know is good, or am I going to try a new place and maybe learn something that's useful?
Yeah, and you use a young child on the screen, a picture of a young child exploring and an older person kind of exploiting, which I thought really kind of summed up maybe the age difference when it comes to what we're more likely to do.
Yeah, so this trade-off is the way that we think about navigating it is normally you should spend the first part of your time exploring and then the second part of your time exploiting, right? And the reason is that early on, you've not necessarily found a lot of good places, and so you shouldn't be, you know, going to those places. Information is more valuable also because you've got a longer time that you're going to have the opportunity to exploit it. Whereas later on, you've visited a lot of places, you probably found the best ones already, and so you have a lot of knowledge that you should be using, because there's not a lot of point in exploring if you're not going to have any opportunities to use that information. And so that sense, yeah, you know, little kids should be very exploratory. Older people should be more set in their ways. Something really gives us a different perspective on how things change as we age.
Yeah. So I suppose then when people say to me, Tom, that those that love me say, you know, you're always eating in the same restaurant, you always eat the same meal. I'm just really exploiting my experience and knowing what I want and knowing what I like.
That's right, yeah. And I think it gives us a different way of interpreting. You know, often we think of older people as being, you know, maybe a little boring or set in their ways, but in fact, they're optimal. They're doing exactly what they should be doing.
I love that word, optimal. I'm going to use that, that's for sure. So I find that really fascinating, because going back to the restaurant thing at the moment, how do you talk about that and the fact that actually we are receiving more information than ever before on different things? So, you know, we can go to TripAdvisor, we can look at which is the best restaurant in our area on Google, which is the nearest restaurant. You throw all that into the equation, does that just muddle the equation, or does that add to it?
I think that we live in an interesting moment where we have so much information at our fingertips if we want to use it, but at the same time, we've almost got too much information, right? So the hard computational problem that we often face is a problem of deciding what it is that we're going to pay attention to and what it is that we're going to ignore. And that's a problem that, you know, we're still working out how to solve. And I think that's a challenge that I'm exploring right now in my research, is how do people navigate those kinds of problems of deciding, yeah, how much to think and how much information to gather before we're ready to act. Yeah.
I'll tell you a prime example then, Tom. We want to buy a vacuum cleaner, so I've been looking online on YouTube, and they've got the top 10 vacuum cleaners available in Spain at the moment, and the review from customers and so on. And I'm watching these videos, and I think I'm spending too much time, whereas years ago I would have just walked into a shop and bought a vacuum cleaner.
That's right, and you would probably have been pretty happy with it. Now that you know all of the reviews, you know exactly what's wrong with the vacuum cleaner that you've decided to buy, and yet it's going to bug you all the time. That's right. So I think that there are going to be circumstances where, in fact, the rational thing to do is not gather all of that information and not spend all the time getting it, because, A, you've wasted time doing that, and, B, the decision that you end up with is one that you're going to be less satisfied by.
Is it quite possible then that people like myself may be falling into this cul-de-sac, thinking that we're more informed and actually we're making less decisions because of it?
Yeah, I think that's a kind of these ideas are something that we explored in a book my friend Brian Christian called Algorithms to Live By. And one of the things that we talk about in that book is that there's a gap between our intuitions about what makes rational decision making and, in fact, what really is rational. And our intuitions tell us, look at all the options, carefully research things, get all the information, and then you're ready to act. But in many situations, the rational thing to do, like in, you know, these cases we were talking about, you know, say, you know, deciding what apartment to rent, right? The real trade-off is one about, you know, the real decision you have to make is one about when you're ready to stop gathering information.
Yeah. Oh, that's an interesting one, yeah. Later on in the talk, and of course, doing a TED talk must be quite difficult, because you have to kind of get everything down into, what, 15 minutes altogether?
I think this was a little bit shorter than that, yeah.
Yeah, actually you did really well, because some people really struggle to get that in there. But later on you talk about computer engineers, innovators who are looking at ways in which computer memories work. And I thought that was really interesting as far as what you can learn from a computer program, how a computer set up, and how we should be using our memories and decision making.
Yeah, so computers and people face a shared set of computational problems precisely because both are living in a world where we have finite space and finite time. And so that means that, you know, you can get ideas not just about how to make decisions, but also about how we should be organizing the space around us. And so, you know, one problem that I think people struggle with is how we should be, you know, organizing things like our offices or our cupboards, how it is that we should be, you know, trying to get on top of all of the mess that's around us. And in fact, one of the surprising lessons that you get from computer science is that sometimes a little bit of mess is actually, you know, the right thing.
That's good news for me. And you use the wardrobe as an illustration as well, don't you? Because I think most of us have trouble using our wardrobes correctly and at least eliminating what we don't need.
Yeah, that's right. So this is a problem that computers face as well. So the way that your computer works, the way that it's able to give you information as quickly as possible, is that it has a special part of its memory called a cache, which is really fast to access. But the problem is that cache is limited size, so it can only keep a limited amount of information in there. And so the computer has to make a decision about when does it get rid of information out of the cache. And that's exactly the problem that you face when you're trying to organize your wardrobe. You've got too many clothes, they're not fitting in there. That space, which is easy for you to access, but maybe you should be thinking about putting some things in storage or giving some things away. And so you have to make a decision about what to get rid of. Hmm. And the principle that the computer uses to solve that problem is the principle of the least recently used piece of information. So what it gets rid of is whatever information you accessed the furthest distance in the past. And you can actually show that that's the best policy for computers to use when you analyze data about how computers, you know, use their caches. That turns out to be pretty close to an optimal strategy. And you can apply that in the context of organizing your wardrobe as well. It says get rid of the thing that you wore or used the furthest in the past, because that's the thing that you're least likely to use again in the future.
And so anybody listening, you need to think like a computer when it comes to your wardrobe, and just, you know, be a bit strict with yourself and maybe chuck things away that you're not going to be using very often, or give them to charity, whatever. That's a great way of looking at it, and I fully agree with everything. The only thing which I need answering is when we think like computers, there's some great strategies there, but does that disregard the fact that we're sometimes emotional and irrational, unlike a computer?
Well, I think this comes back to this idea that, you know, our intuitions about what rational behavior is are actually a little bit wrong. So you can actually, you know, show that some of the things that people do that seem, you know, we think are irrational are in fact perfectly rational. Mm. And in fact, that there's a role for emotion in rational decision making.
Yeah.
There's a role for emotion in terms of simplifying some of the computational problems that human beings face. And so I can give you an example of this. So a good example is love. Right?
Yeah.
Love is this weird thing. Like, why do you fall in love with people? It makes us act in ways that seem irrational. But if you think about the problem that you face when you're trying to find a partner, one of the things that you're thinking about is this person going to be someone who's going to want to be with me forever, right? Is this going to be someone who I'm safe to be with and who's going to irrationally want to be my partner rather than choosing to go with that person who, you know, is objectively better than me? And love is a device that makes people act irrationally in precisely the way that actually makes them more desirable as partners, because they're able to make that commitment. And so if you were, you know, dating someone who was just calculating the odds and sort of figuring out where their best options were, you wouldn't feel secure in any way. You wouldn't be very happy dating that person. So the capacity to fall in love makes you more desirable as someone who would participate in a partnership, and as a consequence can be a rational thing for you to have.
But there are and I fully get what you're saying. There are times, though, when I'm looking at my life and I think, well, maybe I will buy that BMW, and then actually some kind of rationality kicks in and says, well, can you afford to buy the parts for it when it goes wrong? Can you afford to insure it? You're much better off getting a VW or Ford or something. And it's just, but emotion can sometimes lead you the wrong way.
Yeah. So I think a lot of those things come down to questions about, like, the difference between what you could think about as maybe your short-term and your long-term value, right?
Yeah.
Where the error that you might be making in that case is that you're overweighting the immediate satisfaction you're going to get from owning that BMW, and then underweighting the long-term dissatisfaction you're going to have in terms of struggling to maintain it and do all of those other kinds of things. And that's a pattern that you see in human behavior a lot. It's this sort of, you know, short-term versus long-term trade-off.
Yeah.
And that's exactly the kind of thing. So one of the things that we do in my research lab is think about, if we understand human cognition from the perspective of, you know, solving these computational problems, but maybe with some computational limitations, like how far we're able to see into the future, how much computational resources we have that allow us to sort of do long-range planning, then we can think about how to use computers to help people make better decisions that take into account those long-term things. So kind of being able to use a bit of a computer's extra computation to help a person who's limited in the amount of computation that they have available to use. So I wouldn't think about that as being kind of fundamentally irrational.
Yeah.
I would think about that as being a consequence in some ways of the limited computational resources that we human beings are able to use to solve problems.
Yeah.
And so I think people do a pretty good job of using those resources. And then we can think about, how do we get computers to help people to do an even better job in terms of making those long-term decisions?
So when you're bringing this TED Talk and when you're talking about this today, are you saying that actually quite often we're doing this anyway and we're just not recognizing it?
Yeah. So one of the things that we discovered, so when Brian and I were working on this book and researching the different optimal strategies that computers use for solving different kinds of problems, one of the interesting things that we found was that in many cases, people were intuitively following strategies that made a certain kind of sense with respect to the optimal strategies that computers needed to follow. And in fact, it goes beyond that. There are even cases where people were able to solve problems pretty well that still pose a challenge for computers. So there are various ways in which people are still smarter than computers, in the sense of, you know, there are certain kinds of problems where those problems are maybe a little bit outside the exact problem that the computer scientists know how to solve. And the real skill that people have is being able to kind of, you know, work out some pretty good strategies for solving those challenging computational problems.
So the creation hasn't overtaken the creator quite yet then. And with all this information, finally, Tom, you know, and all this knowledge that you have, do you find that you're making impeccable, fantastic decisions all the time now?
I think that would be a, you know, a high standard, right? So I think knowing these things helps me to recognize the circumstances where we actually know what the optimal strategies are, and in those circumstances, I'm able to follow them.
Yeah.
Sometimes, yeah, we definitely get outside the scope of the things that computer scientists know how to do. But I think the main thing that I get out of knowing these different strategies is feeling better about the decisions that I make.
Yeah.
So one thing that's really difficult is, you know, if you're deciding to do something, the only information that you normally get is kind of what we call the outcome of the decision, right? We sort of find out if that worked out or not. You say yes or no. Is that, you know, the way that we normally evaluate decisions is it's a good decision if it has a good outcome, it's a bad decision if it has a bad outcome.
Yeah.
But computer scientists distinguish between the outcome and the process. So what really matters is not what the outcome was, it's whether you followed the best possible process to make that decision. And so if you know that you're following an optimal strategy, then that's something that can make you feel good about the decision that you made, even if the outcome is bad.
Yeah.
So, for example, even though, you know, looking at the first 37% of apartments and then renting the next one you see that's better than anyone you've seen so far is the optimal strategy in terms of maximizing the probability you find the very best place, that's still going to fail, you know, most of the time. It succeeds about 37% of the time. And, you know, the only consolation that you get out of that is that, in fact, you did the very best thing that you could have, regardless of whether you ended up with the very best apartment.
And that's all you can ask, I suppose, at the end of the day. Well, Tom, thank you for coming on. Really appreciate your time. It's a great decision to join us. It really was. Now, if anybody wants to find out more, there's a TED Talk online, and you mentioned the book earlier on as well. Do you want to give us some information on how they can get, how a listener can pick up more on this topic?
Yeah, so the book is called Algorithms to Live By, and it's by Brian Christian and Tom Griffiths.
Yeah, lovely. And the TED Talk's available on the TED Talk website, I should imagine, as well. And I think we saw it on YouTube. Tom, thank you for coming on. Really appreciate your time with us this afternoon, and I think we can all go make a few good decisions now.
Great. Thank you very much.
Cheers, Tom. Thank you. Bye-bye.